Henry and Steinberg continues as we bring in the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, to complete our daily roundtable. He's Ryan Pinder. My name is Pat Steinberg. And, gents, I really liked Elias Lindholm at center on Saturday. I thought he made an impact. I thought he drove Calgary's most dangerous line in the Heritage Classic against the Winnipeg Jets. He's going to start there again tomorrow night. Mr. Wills, it's early yet. It's been just one game, but should this be a long-term thing for the Flames, or is this something you're expecting to revert back to the norm in the somewhat near future? What's your read on Elias Lindholm down the middle?
The way the roster stands right now, guys, I just can't see this being a long-term solution for the Flames. If there was one position where I think they lack depth, it's on right wing. So now you take your best right winger and you move him to center, where arguably you've got more depth than at any other position. I understand why Bill Peters did it. He needed to shake things up. I mean, what's the definition of insanity? Continuing to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, he was pretty patient with his top six, and you know, they had some good games and good stretches in other games. But the bottom line is he needs more from his first and second lines. And when you change your first and second lines, there's going to be a trickle down effect to your third and fourth line. So I think it's probably something that we're going to see short term, unless the Flames go out and get a legitimate top six right winger that could potentially replace Elias Lindholm, whether it be on the right side of the first or the second line. I liked him there. I like that line a lot with him, Matthew Tkachuk, and Johnny Gaudreau. I just don't know with what the Flames have and don't have if they can continue to leave him at center long term.
Yeah, and I see it totally differently. When you move Matthew Tkachuk to the right wing, are you not adding exactly what you talked about, someone to play the right side?
Well, he played left wing, and Johnny Gaudreau played right wing.
Well, sure, but I mean, Tkachuk can play either way. You're moving a guy that's been really good on the left side to the right side. So it's not like the net is that there's no one left on the right. It's the exact same guys on the right, except one guy swapping into Lindholm's spot. And if Al Quine comes in on the fourth line on the left side, I mean, that's not going to be a significant drop from whoever's playing fourth line wing. So I think they want to try this because when you look down the middle, they've got a bunch of players that don't play with a lot of intensity. Monahan, Backlund, Ryan, Jankowski. Which of those guys really moves the needle in terms of the battle level? They're not bad players. They all have strengths. They all are good at a lot of things. But for a group that's really looking to try to engage in games more and is trying to, you know, they're on a quest for consistency, I get why he's in the middle. I also think the way they made their lines against Winnipeg is a better way to roll on the road when you're spreading talent over three lines of guys that can potentially help you offensively, not just two. I'd expect the dress rehearsal, Pat, lasts until the end of the road trip, and then when you're at home, you can shape your roster differently to try to, you know, take advantage of having last change. But for four really good opponents, maybe even five on this road trip, depending how you view Columbus and Winnipeg. I mean, I understand why they're putting their eggs in more baskets rather than loading up two lines.
Willsie, you want to rebut before I jump in, or you want me to go?
No, you go ahead.
Well, here's what I'll say about the situation. First of all, I'm with you, Derek, in that I get why they did it. But I do think moving Lindholm to the middle accomplished one thing specifically on the road, but I think period, it did make them more difficult to match up against. And I would like to see this go on for a somewhat extended period of time. I'm not talking about indefinitely, but let's see it play out here for 2 or 3 weeks and give Lindholm an extended run at center to see exactly what you've got there. Now is the time to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, early in the season is a time where you can experiment. And look, we all know they can easily revert back to Lindholm with Monahan and Gaudreau. They know that that works. They know that that is a high-end line. However, maybe come the playoffs, they feel that having Lindholm down the middle is a better way to match up in road games against Colorado or Vegas or whoever they might face if they get to the playoffs. And if you hadn't done that and you hadn't given it an extended run earlier, how do you know exactly what you have? At least if you give this 8, 9, 10 games, you have something to fall back on. I know this worked when we did it in October and November. We can shift to it and do it here in March or April. So that's why I feel like this might not be the long-term thing. And it's probably going to go back at some point to Lindholm with Monahan and Gaudreau. But if they give this a run now, at the very least, they get some data, they get some eyes on looks of what this can look like if they feel like they're forced into it later on in the season, or maybe more importantly, in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is a great time to experiment. I mean, it's great in a couple of ways. Number one, what the Flames were doing wasn't working. So you might as well try something new. And this is something that Bill Peters has wanted to try going back to last season. And he just couldn't find the right time to do it and didn't want to start this season experimenting that way. But because things weren't working, I think it really did open the door for him to go down this road and try this out. Would I be surprised to see Elias Lindholm still at center 2 weeks from now? No, I think they could get it 5 or 10 games and see how it goes. And like you said, Pat, they can always revert back to the old line. The other reason I think it's a great time to experiment is because you've got to figure out exactly what's going on with some of your top players. Is it, chemistry having dissolved between Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan? Or is it just a blip on the radar, which is what I suspect that it is? And, you know, once guys start scoring some goals and they get their confidence back and their swagger back, they get back to the players that they've been for years and years and years in this league. I think it's a really good time to experiment and see what you've got. And if you have to go to this at some point in time, whether it be in the regular season or in the playoffs, you'll have a better idea of whether or not it works. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, well, then you probably don't go down that road again. But I'm all for doing this for the next little while and seeing how it goes.
And one other thing that I will say about how this might play out, if Sean Monahan, because he has yet to prove in prior tries, albeit limited when Gaudreau's been hurt or when they haven't been playing together, but Monahan has yet to show that he can really drive a line without Gaudreau on his left. If Monahan can show that, whether it be with Mangiapane or Bennett or Quine and Bennett or whoever his wingers are, if this split continues for a little while here, if he can prove that he can drive a line, that I think gives the coaching staff more comfort in keeping Lindholm at center. If it goes the other way and Monahan isn't producing at even strength without Gaudreau, I think that it almost makes you go back to the prior look with Lindholm and Gaudreau by default. So I think the way Monahan plays has a great deal to do with the future decision as well.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, you know, Sean Monahan isn't producing like he's produced in the past. It's still early. There's lots of time for him to get to 20 or 30 goals again. But I do think that he's upped his physicality. And I wonder if part of this experiment is the Flames realizing that, okay, you're playing a little different brand of hockey right now. Let's see if you can maybe drive your own line and play without Johnny Gaudreau and still be effective and productive. But just kind of circling back to something that you said, Ryan, you talked about kind of not putting all the eggs in one basket. Here's another issue these changes create. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But you move Matthew Tkachuk from the left side of your second line. So now you go from having what I think is a pretty good top six when they're playing well. You got Monahan between Gaudreau and Lindholm. You've got Backlund between Tkachuk and whoever. But now your second line left winger of practice today is Allan Quine. With all due respect to Allan Quine, I'm not sure he's a top six forward on the Stanley Cup contender. So there's one glaring hole for me, fellas, with Lindholm at center and Tkachuk in the first line. And maybe the Flames can fill it internally, and maybe they can't.
Yeah, and they had Mangiapane there as well. Like, I mean, I think they're just looking for pairs now, and how you number these things at this point might not really matter as much, especially if you're spreading Monahan, Backlund, and Lindholm over three lines, right? You know, if Mangiapane's there, you're like, okay, that fits a little more than, say, Quine. But, I mean, it all depends how we number these things. I mean, Backlund for a leak have been two-thirds of a second line forever here. Are they now a third line? I don't know. I mean, it's definitely going to leave you weaker at spots on your top two lines, but the payoff is that you're much more matchup-proof with a third line, i.e. the whole Pittsburgh idea where they had Kessel on the third, Malkin on the second, Crosby on the first, and won the cup by just being a matchup nightmare. Now, it's not the exact same personnel, clearly. And to be fair, if you have Mangiapane and Ryan on your fourth line, I mean, that's How can you call that a fourth line the way that those two have played together? But it's certainly something I'd like to see for a bit just to see what it looks like. Because that's the one thing we know from last year is that despite all the talk, curiosity, and interest in playing Lindholm down the middle, they never did it with any significance. And when you're down in a series in the spring, that's probably not the time to start going crazy with ideas you've never tried. At least they're giving this a look now.
And Lou loves to talk about slotting. Don't you guys think that the addition of one winger who's a legitimate top six guy would make everything slot so much better? That's how I see it right now.
Yeah, sure. And it felt that way before they moved Lindholm to center. Like, if Frolik can be a third line right winger and you can find someone to help that second unit score more, then absolutely. I think that's something that if you have a feel that Valimaki could be a contributing part by the playoffs, that maybe that jumps to the top of your priority list in terms of an organizational need. Whereas maybe in the offseason you're thinking, okay, well, one more D would really help this group in the playoffs. I think they haven't been scoring like they used to, and you can't expect, what, four or five forwards coming off career years to just repeat a career season that easily. So maybe a scoring winger does become the top need.
It's an interesting story to watch. We know this. It looks like Lindholm's going to start at center tomorrow when the Flames take on the Carolina Hurricanes. Our daily Flames roundtable. Derek Wills in Raleigh. Pinder and Steinberg here back at Sportsnet 960 World Control. Guys, Tobias Rieder on waivers. What do we make of this, Derek? What's your feel as to why the Flames have placed him there?
I was told they did it to give themselves a little bit of roster flexibility. So if he clears, and that's a big if for me, but if he clears, you now have 30 days where you can send him up or send him down and call him up. And it gives you a little bit of flexibility as far as what you can do and who you can bring up and send down from the Stockton Heat. So I'm told that's why they did it. But here's my concern. I think we would all agree that if they lack depth at any position, it's right wing. They just lost Austin Zarnik, maybe until Christmas time, with a significant lower body injury. What if you lose Tobias Rieder on waivers? You know, he's versatile. He can play left wing. He can play right wing. He's played primarily on the right side in his career. Now your depth takes another hit. And he's a guy who's, you know, had limited ice time, hasn't played in all the games, but I think he's been fairly effective when he's been in there. Finally scored for the first time in what must have felt like forever for him. That had to be a real shot in the arm for his confidence as well. And when I look around the league, and I'm sure Brad Treloving's done this, and he thinks this is the best time to expose him, where there's the least amount of risk that he's going to get claimed. But hey, the Blues just lost Vladimir Tarasenko for at least 5 months. He's a right winger. If you're the Blues, would you take a look at Rieder? And you know, he's on a friendly contract making the league minimum. I might have a peek at him.
I don't think there's a huge risk of losing this guy on waivers personally. Now, guessing what happens on waivers is sometimes not as easy as it looks, given all the talent you see cross at early points of the season and then some claims made later on based on need. But we have to remember, this is a guy that did not have a contract that showed up on a PTO. If there was significant interest in Tobias Rieder, he would not have been available to be signed well into the preseason, what, even into October, I think, by the time they finally got that done. So I'm not too concerned about that. And if he is claimed on waivers, well, my goodness, you might have to claim somebody else's right winger off waivers later on. I think he's the definition of replacement level. And while they aren't deep at right wing, there are lots of Tobias Rieders out there. You can go find goals, guys that have scored one goal in the last 16 months around that can play hockey.
I have liked Tobias Rieder in his role. I think that he's done just fine. He was signed to be a fourth liner who can bring speed and to kill penalties. And I think in that role, he has done what he is asked. But Rieder doesn't move the needle at this point. He doesn't push you any further forward. Let's be honest. He's a 12-13 forward on this team. So here's how I read this, guys. And it's similar to you, Derek. The first thing that I thought and everything that I've been able to glean is that, yeah, this is for flexibility because I don't think the Flames are anywhere close to being satisfied with their mix of forwards right now. And by having both Quine and potentially Rieder, if he clears tomorrow morning, by having both those guys waiver exempt, it gives you the ability to shuttle guys to and from. So if they wanted to try Dubé for two or three games, or if they wanted to give Glenn Godden a look, or Byron Fraze, or somebody else that they might want to shuttle back and forth between Stockton and Calgary, this gives them the flexibility to do that. And so I understand it. I get it. And, you know, I'm not expecting them to lose Reader on waivers. I would be a little surprised if that were to happen. And if it were, then I think that you can get yourself around it. I just feel with how close the Flames are to the cap right now, with how little flexibility they have, if you feel this is a sweet spot to slide somebody through waivers and not worry about it too much, I think you take advantage of that window because they need all the flexibility they can get. So that's how I read this situation. And because the team, I don't think, is comfortable at all with their bottom six, especially with Zarnik out, I think they're still looking at experimenting and finding what works. And if you want to do that, you might need a little bit more flexibility as to who you can and cannot call up from Stockton and send down to the American League.
Yeah, I think you both make fair points. I do think that Tobias Reeder is a little bit better than just replacement level. I do think he has some upside. He's a great skater. You can use him on special teams. Just scored a goal, and who knows, maybe that leads to more. He did score between 12 and 16 in every single season in the league prior to last year. So I do think that there is some upside there, but I'm guessing that Brad Treleving's probably looked at the other 30 teams and looked at what their needs are right now. And I don't think the Flames want to lose Tobias Reeder. They're hoping that he clears and that he's still a part of the organization from what I'm told, but probably thinks if he's going to make a move like this, this is the best time to make it. With the chance to keep the player in the fold. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But I do think that Reeder's a guy other NHL teams were interested in. I was told that there were some other teams sniffing around him early in October before the Flames finally got that deal done. So we'll see.
Tobias Reeder on waivers, 10 a.m. is when he would clear tomorrow, Calgary time. So we'll keep our eye on that. Final topic, it's a fun one on our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Ryan Pinder, Pat Steinberg along with you. All three of us had the privilege of being in Saskatchewan on Saturday for the 2019 Heritage Classic. Mr. Wills, how will we remember 48 hours in Regina for the 2019 Heritage Classic?
Oh, what an experience in Regina. The only issue I have is that stupid song, which has been stuck in my head since last Friday morning. But other than that, I mean, it was just a ton of fun to be there and to be a part of it. I mean, when we got there on Friday afternoon, it didn't really feel like an outdoor game was going to be played at Mosaic Stadium on Saturday night. I mean, it was 17 degrees and sunny and the ice was melting and not really ideal conditions to play a hockey game in. Didn't really feel like a Heritage Classic. But then overnight, the temperatures drop, the winds pick up, the snow blows in, and it was just magical at Mosaic Stadium on Saturday night. And, you know, being able to open up the windows in our broadcast booth, both of you guys watched the game from the same booth that Peter Labardius and I called the game from, and you could just feel the atmosphere. You could feel the cold as well. And I give the fans who braved that cold and that wind all night a lot of credit for sticking around and watching a game that ended up going to overtime, but just a ton of fun. You know, pretty good hockey game. I think both teams battled ice conditions a little bit at time. The ice was nice and hard, but the snow made making plays a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
And it was just a ton of fun to be a part of that. My only other gripe would be the Jets jerseys. Uh-huh. Couldn't see the numbers on them, so it made calling the game pretty tough.
Oh, there brother. It is. Here yeah, just for you. That's right.
There you go. Thanks
one more
a lot.
Time.
Thanks,
you had to know time. Where I was going with that, Derek.
Experience. That guy's got the – I have a bad singing voice. This guy's got a worse singing voice. Experience, Regina.
Don't know if it cracked as many times, but feels like you're close. It was cool to be there. This was clearly a momentous day in the city's history, the province's history, and that was an experience that everyone who was there was jacked up about, and it was cold, but it was nowhere near what we had in Calgary in 2011 or Edmonton in 03. I hope they go back. Never mind all the other neutral sites. 5 years from now, let's do it again. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was, first of all, I thought the city of Regina and the Regina locals nailed it. Like, they knocked it out of the park. They made it feel like it was a big deal. I think there was a buzz around the city for it. Anytime you got in a cab or an Uber, it was, geez, this is a big deal. Like, we don't usually get this. There was an appreciation. It ended up being a complete, legit sellout of 33,518. And it was a very, it felt like you were part of something special. It felt like you were at an event that in the city you were in, this is huge. And they're gonna get the Grey Cup next year. And that was a perfect indicator of, what a party that this is going to be in 2020, because it was a good party over the weekend. And the final thing I'll say, what a facility. Having been to CFL facilities in Edmonton, in Vancouver, obviously here, and in Montreal, like, there's no question that Mosaic Stadium is the best facility in the Canadian Football League. That's like an NFL stadium, albeit with a slightly smaller scale. That's like an NFL stadium smack dab in the middle of the prairies. I love it. It was a perfect venue for what we saw over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And kudos to the National Hockey League and to the city of Regina. They put on a heck of an event, didn't they?
Absolutely. Mr. Wells, enjoy your Monday night in Raleigh. Regina.
Well, yeah, I'm going to listen to another tune and try to get this one out of my head.
Do it quickly.
Experience Raleigh tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow on game day.
All right, guys. Have a good night.